The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hello and welcome to Out to Lunch, the podcast where I feed the most intriguing of people while asking them probing questions. We used to do it in terrific restaurants, but now, as we're all in lockdown, we do it via video call and a terrific takeaway. In the past, I've often interviewed a guest that I know a little. Today, it's slightly different because I've known her for over 10 years, and as she's only 30, well, that means she was still in her teens when we met, but it is absolutely no surprise to me that she's now your actual star. It's the brilliant actress and singer known for her roles in Chernobyl, Beast, Judy and Wild Rose. It's Jessie Buckley.
And he taught me to read a book called Fuck It, and so I did. And that's been my motto ever since.
Jessie Buckley, as I live and breathe, what delight to see you. Welcome to Into Lunch. How
marvelous.
Are you?
I'm marvellous.
There's a drink in your hand, and I'm suspecting that it's...
Well,
what have you got?
I thought... Because any, you know, from our relationship in the past, we've often met over a drink in the Ivy Club, and so I thought it was only right to make a gin and tonic for myself and have a proper dinner.
Can we specify that by relationship you mean our friendship, rather? Where am I talking to you? Where are you right
I'm
now?
I'm currently in my sitting room. My flatmates kindly moved downstairs to the kitchen while I set up my culinary experience. While the virus has been going on, we've been having Saturday night dinner parties, but each weekend it's a different country. So last weekend we went to the very renowned, infamous restaurant called Me So Cute. And we made our own Japanese food and drank sake and had a wonderful time.
Your bike, your delivery bike is, I'd say it's about 2.5-3 minutes out.
Oh, excellent. Just so you know. I'm so excited. I feel like it's Christmas. These are small pleasures during this difficult time.
Yeah, that's what's
going
to
happen. Are you
going
to get the same meal as me now?
I have a similar meal coming from a different place at the same culinary genre, which is my way of being mysterious. Because I think we'll do the reveal when your bike turns up, because you haven't got a clue what's coming.
No, I
have
know.
You? So you do actually like your food. The fact that we have eaten things in each other's company before randomly, I think.
Do you know what? I have been thinking about the most random thing that I love you the most for of what you ate in my company.
Yeah, go on.
I think I just moved to London and you got popcorn ice cream at the Ivy, which was kind of like the most exotic thing that I'd ever seen. And you were so in love with it that I was in love with it. And this popcorn ice cream, we'd sit up on the counter and you'd eat it and I'd look at it lovingly.
Sure, I gave you some, didn't I?
You did give me some as well. Okay.
Well, listen, I'm going to go back to that in a bit. I'm going to do what we do, which I'm going to start in the here and now.
Okay.
February the 2nd. You performed on the stage of the Royal Albert Hall at the BAFTAs, singing Glasgow. Yeah. And you looked staggeringly comfortable up there, which was amazing given just how few people there were with you. You had a guitarist and a double bassist, and it was beautiful. I mean, if you were in your comfort zone, tell me.
Oh, my God, absolutely not. I mean, I was probably an emotional nightmare the week leading up to it. Because it's definitely one of the most scariest things I've ever done. But I love those musicians. I love Neil McCall and Ben Nichols. And I really wanted to have that moment with them. And in my head, I wanted to feel like I was singing in a pub with those two brilliant guys.
I want to ram it home what the audience was like, because I watched the footage again. I loved watching you do it because you know how much of a fan of you I am in your singing. The cutaways were to Pacino, De Niro, Hugh Grant. When you get to Olivia Colman, you think, oh, it's just Olivia Colman.
I was absolutely shitting myself all week. And I woke up on that morning and I said, if I don't enjoy this, I'm an idiot. And to be honest, I'm much more comfortable in that space than I call, like, doing a red carpet. They're, for me, the terror carpet.
So did he prefer to actually have a job
that
night?
It was brilliant.
And I got to kind of be
with my friends backstage and have a packet of crisps after we sang in a glass of champagne and went out for the end of it and had a lovely night.
It was fantastic all round. I want to go back to I'd Do Anything.
Yeah.
The TV series. How does 17-year-old Jessie Buckley from Killarney decide to enter?
Well, it wasn't really anything ruthlessly considered. I was struggling with depression and I kind of didn't really know where I was going. One of the teachers in school who I had done all my plays with had said, oh, they're doing a new show. Andrew Lloyd Webber's doing a new show. You should do it. And I was like, well, I don't know. Anyway, I went to Guildford audition and I didn't get in and was absolutely heartbroken.
Let's be clear, the Guildford course is the musical theatre course in the UK, isn't it? I don't think there is, I mean, everywhere, a lot of drama schools have an element of musical theatre, but that Guildford course is the one, isn't it?
It's like a specific one, yeah. That and Mountview are probably the ones that produce the most musical theatre people. Anyway, the next day, I was staying with some family friends in Surrey, and the next day there was an open audition in the County Hall, I think, on the South Bank. I really didn't think anything of it. I thought it would be a practice for my next audition for Mountview and nothing more than that.
Yeah, I should say that the judges were Andrew Lloyd Webber, Cameron McIntosh. Was John Barrowman on that
one? Yeah, he was.
Or not?
Yeah.
This was a talent show in which they were going to cast someone to play Nancy in a stage production of Oliver. And it finished with you and Jodie Prenger having to sing As Long As He Needs Me against each other. Both of you sang the same song, as I recall. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then you lost.
Not quite.
And Lloyd Webber Lloyd Webber and McIntosh both made it very clear that they were extremely disappointed. In retrospect, and then we'll move on, was it a brilliant thing that you didn't actually win?
In hindsight, it's part of my story, and that's brilliant. Oh, I think somebody's knocking.
Okay, go for it. So, do you like Vietnamese food?
I love Vietnamese food. I really love Vietnamese
food.
So,
I have got you a takeaway from Cai Tre over there in Shoreditch, because there's a lot of little Vietnamese restaurants up that way. And so you've got a green papaya salad with a vinaigrette, roasted peanuts and marjoram. These are your starters.
Delicious.
And we're stocking your fridge, basically. Summer rolls of prawns, daikon and Vietnamese herbs and some salt and pepper prawn.
Ooh.
So I've got a takeaway from a place called Ban Ban, which is down here near me. There's two branches, one in Brixton, one in Peckham. They've just reopened the Peckham one for takeaway. And going on what I've got, I would heartily recommend it, which I think is actually what I'm supposed to do as a job, recommend restaurants, isn't it? I've got a papaya salad, mine with prawns, topped with peanuts and crispy shallots and some little crackers, which is looking rather gorgeous, I have to say. And some ground beef in betel leaves and some sticky chicken wings. So You come out the back of I'd Do Anything.
Yeah.
You get cast in A Little Night Music, directed by Trevor Nunn.
Yeah.
So the way we met, to put it on the record, it then transfers to the West End.
Yeah.
In the spring of 2009. I looked up the date, so you were still 19. And when the cast are in their plays, they get extended membership to the Ivy Club.
Yeah.
I need to set the scene for this. The Ivy Club is an appalling members club full of awful people, but brilliant cocktails. Above the Ivy. This is a very nice place. I was a member for 10 years. I'm not sure if I am anymore, but anyway, because it's closed in the current circumstances. And Joe Thompson and I had been at university together 35 years ago, and he was the man responsible for getting me into music and playing live and gigging and all of that. So you come in, and Joe loves playing with singers.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just passes by and then sometimes it stops the room. Do you remember?
Yeah. Well, first of all, like, I felt like I was in The Great Gatsby in my head, you know? Like, it was a kind of extraordinary. I think the Ivy Club had just opened and there was kind of a firework of energy in that place where people would like get up, or you'd have like opera singers one night and people from...
The music scene was very, very serious, very important. And there were top musicians
playing. Or dancers. Or like, I remember there would be nights where the whole kind of room, people would be on tables singing cabaret all together and twinkles be like flying or whatever.
A twinkle being a champagne cocktail with vodka and elderflower cordial.
And absolutely lethal and completely delicious. And I would say the same for Joe, is that Joe introduced me to music in a different way to what I'd experienced before. And I remember that first night when I did sing to him afterwards, it was about 1 o'clock or whatever. And he came out and he did his little card and he was like, oh, I'd really like to like keep singing with you. And from then on in, we went on a really, like, really important, special musical journey at that point of my life. And I owe him a lot.
The thing I didn't realise, and I'm ashamed of this, is that you have grade 8 in piano.
Yeah, don't be ashamed. I can play those grade 8 pieces well. I can't play anything else very well.
But it's not the only instrument you play, is it?
Well, Mom's a harpist and a singer, so we grew up with a lot of music in our house. And so I played the harp and was in the Glen Eagle Marching Band, which was the social suicidal point of my life, where I would walk.
You were in a marching band.
I was in the Glen Eagle Marching Band, and every Sunday I was with my clarinet with some form of ligature or apparatus missing, march around the car parks in Clarny, with a stand by... No, please laugh. It is incredibly laughable. I think I will be forever grateful for my parents for giving us the gift that they would just give us experiences and an energy to go into things wholeheartedly and, you know, no kind of pressure of a long-term thing, but just pure joy of experience.
How are your summer rolls from Kai Tray?
The summer rolls were absolutely delicious. And I'm a very big fan of peanuts, any kind of nut situation added into food. I really like crunchy things as well. So
there's lots of good crunchy things.
There's a lot of crunchiness going on.
At that time, it was all, you know, we are going back almost 10 years now. In fact, I think we probably are. From the outside, it was all going brilliantly. You had acquired an agent, Kate Winslet's agent. You were gigging, you'd done some shows, you were being seen. And I remember sitting next to you at the bar at the Ivy and saying, so what's the plan? What are you going to do? And you said, I'm going to go to RADA. And I kind of sat back and said, what? What you said back was, I want to be 20.
Yeah.
It seemed an extraordinary thing, an incredibly mature thing as well to do, to step away and say, this has all gone brilliantly and now I'm going to go and get trained. What was in your head? It wasn't surely just about hanging around with people your own age.
I wanted to be part of a community of people who were my own age, and I wanted to read lots. I felt like I had a peripheral, raw feeling regards to working and my industry, and that rawness was incredibly useful, but I also felt a bit naive to, you know, and that I needed to spend some time to get to know myself, but also get to know myself enough so that I had an idea about how I could add something into the world that I loved, which was unique to me, and nurture that.
Was it not slightly odd that you'd already, you know, performed, you'd been in the West End, were the tutors willing to accept the experience you'd had? Or did they try to put you back in your box?
Some did and some didn't. There were some brilliant, brilliant teachers there, like John Piskitza, who was my acting coach, was incredibly fantastic, like amazing. You know, I had some financial help from this beautiful friend of mine called Tony throughout RADA, but I also had been working since I was 17, so I had a certain sense of responsibility to like earn money so that I could just live in London. So I did work in my holidays so that I could kind of fund.
What were you doing?
I was gigging. At a certain point, people in RADA didn't like that. and I did get a firm rap on the knuckles. And
you basically got told to stop gigging, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I got suspended and from RADA. And
seriously, I didn't know that. You got suspended because you were doing the thing you were training to do.
Yeah. Well, you're not meant to really work. It was the most conducive way for me to be able to do my training and also work in between. And music and singing was such a massive part of me. And to feel like you were kind of being given out to because of that was really difficult for me. And I had horrible panic attacks in the end of my second year. And I remember going to this teacher and saying, I just don't think I will be the best actress because I feel watched. And I really am grateful for him because he said, if you leave, they win. And he told me to read a book called Fuck It. And so I did. And that's been my motto ever since.
Well, you went and you did, you know, serious stuff. You were in Kenneth Branagh's company in A Winter's Tale. How was that?
It was brilliant. You know, like you've got Judi Dench, who I have always just kind of looked at as being somebody that I would like to be when I grow up, which I'm sure a lot of people would like to be like Judi Dench when they grow up. And it was a really lovely company. And I love the family. Like, this is my family, especially in theatre, because you're in a kind of mesh pit every night and you get together and you make a pact to, like, for 2.5 hours to put every ounce of yourself into giving something to people that you can't even see, you know. And I've loved everybody. Maybe not everybody, but most of the people that
you don't have to love most everybody. Of the people that... So here we are in 2020, we're in the midst of lockdown, it has to be said, but some amazing roles have come your way, or you've made amazing choices. The brilliant performance in Chernobyl, where essentially the character you were playing had to represent the hardship of the entire Ukrainian people. That was...
Thank you very much.
I mean, that's... No, what I mean is, it's not to kind of... I thought there was I watched every episode with, you know, my jaw slack. It's amazing, amazing drama. If you haven't seen Chernobyl, you really have to. You're brilliant, better at saying her name, Maria
Ludmila Ignatenko.
That's it. And she is the wife of a firefighter who works on the reactor when it goes up. It's an extraordinary story.
Yeah.
Were you aware of much of it before you went into that?
I think I was probably aware as much as everybody else was aware of the word of Chernobyl. I didn't know really the ins and outs of what had happened. And Craig Mazin, who wrote the script, and Johan Renk, who directed it, and the book that it's based on by Svetlana Alexeyevich, Chernobyl Voices, was just like, it was completely eye-opening. And we need confidence and ego and pride in order to make things happen. But the fact that man isn't bigger than nature ultimately, and that these huge tragedies can have such a ginormous effect on a mass amount of people. It was humbling and awakening, and it was a really powerful thing to be part of.
When a script like that comes your way, are you immediately aware? Could you see that it was going to be a very big thing? What goes on?
You never really know that things are going to, like, take off. You know, like, it's a political tragedy. It's not like it's a kind of escapist rom-com. So you don't, like, you genuinely, I think you, when I read it first, you're struck by the honesty of it and the power of that honesty, which affects you. So you're hoping to bring that to light. I actually love audition. I love auditioning and I love reading scripts. And I guess what I look when you're doing something like...
You must know you're a rare creature then, because you must have had that conversation with actors who hate auditioning.
Even if you don't get it, I think they're little gifts. Like, you get to read these brilliant scripts by these brilliant people, and you get to have somebody's life cross across your path for 4 days of your life, and in the hope that you'll be able to live with them a little bit longer.
When you got the script for Beast, that was a 2017 film, and I think there's sort of a view that that was a breakthrough for you. Were you up against loads of people for that role? Do you want to explain what Beast was to those who haven't seen it?
Beast was a film written by Michael Pierce. It was his first feature. And it was the first film that I ever did. And it was a psychological thriller, romantic thriller about a girl called Mal from the island of Jersey off in the Channel Islands, who falls in love with a wayward man played by Johnny Flynn. I'd say I've met a script like that maybe three times in my work life. And I'm sure I was up against many brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people. And I really fought for that.
How do you fight for a role in an audition? It's always seen as a one-sided sort of power play. They sit there, they have the power of deciding. I mean, is that another Kalani thing? We just knock on the door.
I fight you behind a nightclub.
I've got a horse outside.
Look, I don't, you know, you can't physically fight, like you don't fight anybody.
Oh, you can give it a try,
like. Maybe it's more of a fight in yourself of like, I kept that script under my mattress for months until I'd got it.
That's fantastic.
So maybe it was like a more of a internal fight, you know.
Hello, it's Ollie here. I'm the executive producer on Out to Lunch. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, one of the relationships I'm proudest of in my life is with my daughters. They're not quite the age to go for fancy lunches with celebs yet, but we do enjoy our family dinners together in relative harmony. You know, give us time, that they are still quite young. But this takes work, and it's a mistake to think that relationships have to be easy to be right. The best relationships come out of learning to live with each other and keeping our sense of humour, even when food is spilt all over the table or dinner's not to everyone's liking. It can be really tricky, but therapy can help you with those skills. You can work through parenting challenges, explore seeing eye to eye as a couple, and work through your relationship with yourself too. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's flexible and you can switch therapists at any time, as that's a relationship that needs to be the right fit too. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/outtolunch today and get 10% off your first month.
The movies are back, baby. And if you're looking for a weekly podcast to keep up with all the new releases and all the hottest news and rumors coming out of Hollywood, check out Movies, Baby, with 5 Y's. Is Emma Stone on track for greatest actress of all time?
What's the best Godzilla movie of all?
What's up with John Cena?
Love Lies Bleeding? We'll take more where that came from.
What movie should have won Best Picture at this year's Oscars?
Hint, it's the name of 2 months and they ain't close together.
Those are just some of the topics we've discussed on recent episodes of Movies, Baby. Every week on Movies, Baby, Forever Dog co-founders and lifelong movie fanatics Brett and Joe break down the hottest movie news, review the latest releases, shout out forgotten classics, and prophesy the future of Hollywood. You can listen to Movies, Baby, wherever you get podcasts, and you can watch Movies, Baby live every Thursday night on YouTube at Movies, Baby with 5 Y's. Movies, Baby!
Do you want to move on to another dish? Yeah. I'll tell you what the other two you've got. I'm just basically trying to feed you. you have got, there's some wok fried egg noodles with mixed seafood.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some Vietnamese caramelized braised catfish.
Oh, catfish.
In fish sauce and pepper. In front of me, I've got thick tapioca and rice flour noodles tossed with herbs, bean sprouts and tofu mix, drenched in a coconut cream dressing, which is vegan, from Ban Ban.
I've got nice mushrooms and squid, green things, chili.
Well, we like those.
We like those.
They always add to the gaiety of nations. You know, when you're looking at somebody's life from the outside, you only see the roles they get. There must have been some you didn't get.
Oh, yeah,
along the
loads.
Way.
I think there's been certain points where I was gutted. Like, there's one, yeah, where at the time I was gutted, but I don't know.
You're going to tell us what? Or are you going to bury the pain?
I was auditioning for Janis Joplin and I hadn't really met her fully. Like, I had listened kind of to her music, but I hadn't really, and it just didn't work out. But I
that
was sad
me
about
pain,
that.
Actually.
I was very sad about that.
So am I. You would have been an absolutely astonishing Janis Joplin. I mean, there's been lots of stuff that you've done, and it's obviously War and Peace, I think, was possibly the moment when a lot of television audiences in the UK got to see you do your thing. there was a moment when I stopped in a tube station and there was a poster for Wild Rose with you about 5 feet, you know, top to bottom. And it was the least surprising moment from the moment I met you. It's just, oh, right, it's finally happened. That role does seem like it could have been written for you. For anybody who's not had the good taste to see this movie, it's about a young Glaswegian woman who loves country and wants to be a country singing star. We meet her as she's coming out of prison in Glasgow. Her kids are being brought up by her own mum, played by Julie Walters. Julie Walters!
I know!
And it is it's a brilliant movie. I was, and I think you were, a little surprised to see you embrace country in the way you did.
Yeah. I mean, I, to be honest, I didn't like country music at all before I started the film. But I think I'd only heard a certain version of it. And then the musicians that I had worked with on the film, and before we started shooting, we kind of bottle up to this shed in North London and sit. And I kind of learnt it there amongst them through Amy Lou Harris and Bonnie Raitt and Dolly, of course, and Hank Williams and John Prine. And they introduced me to the stories of country music, mostly.
When it comes to getting on top of an accent like that, how much work did you have to do? Did you do the full method thing of going and living in Glasgow and trying to pass yourself off?
Yeah. About a month before I started filming, I kind of based myself in Glasgow, and we would meet up and walk around, and I'd speak Glaswegian and go into certain coffee shops and try and get away with buying a pint of milk or whatever coffee in Glaswegian.
Did anybody pull you up on it when you went into the coffee shops to try and get a pint of milk?
If they did, I probably was too nervous that they might that I probably didn't give them a chance to but no, they didn't.
What was it like being on set with Julie Walters?
Oh, like, just bloody glorious. But she's really, like, down to earth, and she's just there with you, you know? There's no, like, airs or graces, and wants to make each scene as alive as possible, but also up for a laugh and a cup of tea and a packet of crisps, which is the most important thing on a set.
A packet of crisps?
Well, no, maybe not crisps. There's just endless biscuits. There's endless biscuits and tea. I drink more tea and coffee on a set than I ever do anywhere else in my life.
Now, we can say now that you've been in Chicago shooting Fargo,
yeah,
the series, haven't you? That pretty much was what you were taken off when this whole crisis happened. How long had you been out there for? We were communicating when you were in Chicago.
I was out there nearly 6 months, yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
How do you take to that? Because you are someone, I know you're someone who, you're very close to your family, you're close to your mates.
Yeah.
Is that tricky?
It is hard. Chicago's hard during winter as well. It's very cold.
Oh yeah, it's a bloody cold city.
It's beautiful and has like an amazing history and music and food. Like the food there was brilliant. But it's it's a bit like a Glasgow of America, you know. It's an industrial city. Mm. I think I've realised that I really love and need nature or your friends, your family or your fella or whatever. It's hard, yeah.
Because when you did come back because of COVID, you went back to Killarney. You sent me photographs of the hills. And I mean, absolutely extraordinary. West of Ireland.
It was the first time I've been home since I left. I was home for like 6 weeks.
Seriously, since you left to do anything?
Yeah, I haven't been home for that long, length of time.
Is it two sisters or two sisters?
I've got three younger sisters and a brother. Yeah. Blimey. And we live, like, Killarney, where I live, is completely magical. And I love London, and I consider London my home now. But Ireland and the nature and the wildness of it is in my heart. And I really, really miss that. And I think there's part of me that's probably looking for that. But I think I've just got used to, you do have to adapt all the time to different cities or cultures or characters or parts, you know, which I love. I think that would be my greatest fear if I was like in a very stable circumstance, that would fill me with utter dread. That might be the worst thing ever happen to me.
By the way, have you got to the catfish yet?
Yeah. I'm making my way through this quite quickly and in with huge enjoyment.
Well, I wasn't expecting any restraint, I'll be honest. we haven't talked about Judy at all. So in Judy, you played late career Judy Garland's assistant to Renée Zellweger. How was that experience?
I think I grew up, like lots of people, I feel like Judy Garland was the red curtains that I looked behind into this world. And one of the first films I ever saw was Meet Me in St. Louis that my dad brought back. And at different points, she's just been this pillar of what this whole thing is to me. So it was, and to see Renée be that and be part of that was completely, it felt like a kind of a full circle in lots of ways.
You know how to get inside those songs. Was it kind of curious to watch Zellweger sing them? Were you on set when she did those scenes?
At different times I was. It was it was amazing. I mean, she's amazing and she's a...
Yeah, she is.
She's a completely beautiful, generous soul. Like, she would sing that end song in the film Somewhere Over the Rainbow like her lifeblood depended on it. And then she flopped out, and then they'd say cut, and she'd flop down onto the stage and she'd natter to all the extras like they were her aunts and uncles. And then they'd go, okay, action. And she'd get up again and give that performance on that scene as well. Like Michael Gambon was in the scene and we were just watching her, and he just turned to me and I don't know if he thought we were still in the scene or if he was being, he like turned to me and was like, who is that girl? She's incredibly special. And he had tears coming out of his eyes, and I had tears coming out of my eyes. And, you know, little moments like that are that's what you live for, is like a bit of magic. And I've always loved watching. Even when we were doing A Winter's Tale with Judy or Henry V, I would always come down and sit in the wings and watch Judy and watch Jude or Ken or whatever do their thing and eavesdrop, you know, on these little magical moments that are unique to that moment.
Is that to learn the craft or to enjoy the performance?
Probably both. I mean, there's lots, most of the people in our job, I just think, how do you do that? How are you doing that? And also, what's amazing about those people like Renée and Judy and Jude is they make you forget even asking that question, and all of a sudden you're just one of the audience or one of the people opposite them.
In preparation, solely in preparation for interview, I watched Misbehaviour two nights ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if you would agree with this, but that character struck me as being closer to you than many of them. So Misbehaviour is about the 1970 Miss World final, won by Miss Grenada, and the protest of the women's liberation movement. And it's a great movie. I enjoyed it hugely. But there seemed to be or was it just simply that your hair was like yours? It was for a long time. Is that what it was? Hair model zone.
It probably was my hair. I often say I can't act, I just change my hair. That's generally my method of madness. She probably had this similar fieriness, I would maybe say. In what ways did you think we were similar, apart from my hair?
The hair was there, but also a kind of in-your-face element, as in you don't take bullshit from anybody, and you're very clear and direct. I mean that in the best possible way. You don't stand on ceremony.
Maybe not now.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know.
And you also did a great Yorkshire accent. I did love the moment at the end, which was, kudos to the writer and director, where you turn and look at yourself, the person you're playing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those women are completely. I mean, it was a joy to like meet the real Joe Robinson and all of them and hear their stories about where they were coming from at that point in their life. And yeah, and I guess with all the characters that I've ever played, what I love is they kind of just walk across your heart and leave a little kind of tattoo on it. You know, I think I'm probably just a big fat mess of lots of different people at this stage. I like doing graffiti. That was good fun.
Oh, yeah. You were spraying a billboard. I think it was in a back street in Farringdon, wasn't it? I think it was just behind where the Guardian's office is.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Exactly where was. Did they have to keep reposting it, or did they have a way of wiping the graffiti off so you could do the shot again?
No, it was just, it was one poster that you had like one time to do it. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, thank fuck you got it right.
I think I actually didn't. And then they somehow fudged, they made it work.
So we have to talk about what was meant to be next, what's coming next. You were meant to do Juliet, weren't you, at the National?
Yeah.
Who was directing?
Simon Godwin, lovely Simon Godwin, was directing. And my great, brilliant friend Josh O'Connor was to play Romeo. We kind of don't really know what's going to happen. I'm really excited about going back into the theatre and doing that there and doing it with Josh, who I really wouldn't want to do it with anybody but him. So I hope it will happen at some point. When that will be, I don't really know. It's kind of a really scary time for theatres, I guess. And
oh, yeah.
I can't imagine over 1,000 people will be bottling into the National Theatre anytime soon. But when we can, I really hope that I'll still be able to do it. Otherwise, I'll be a real right old hag by the time I get around.
Well, you think you might get too old for Juliet?
Yeah.
I think you've got a couple of years to pass. So, and I know this will make you blush, but I will say it. So when we all met you, and I think Lloyd Webber has said it as well, you know, if somebody had said to us then, this is what will happen to Jessie Buckley 10 years down the line because she's got it, none of us would have been surprised. Are you surprised?
Yeah, I'm absolutely surprised. Yeah.
Thank God you said that, because you'd have been a monster if you said otherwise.
It's madness.
Jessie, it has been absolutely lovely to share lunch with you. It's not the way we were planning.
No, but we'll do it again. I think we'll probably do it again.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, this, but just normally.
And when we do, the twinkles will be on me, okay?
Okay.
Is that all right?
I'll buy you a twinkle.
All right, then. So all that remains is for me to say, Jessie Buckley, thank you for staying in for lunch with me. It's been an absolute joy. As I have to say, I knew it would be.
I was really looking forward to this as an old, loving friend of yours. And I hope we have more out to lunch in lunches again.
That's brilliant. Could you read the script one more time? And this time, if you can... There is nothing like catching up with an old friend over a cracking lunch, which is exactly what that was. And if you live in London and want to try the food we had for yourself, Jessie's Vietnamese lunch came from Cai Tre in Shoreditch, and mine came from Ban Ban in Peckham, and both are available via Deliveroo. And if you're hungry for more, there are lots of other episodes, including from Series 1 and 2 of Out to Lunch, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you could manage a 5-star review as well, well, that would just be perfect. Out to Lunch is a Something Else and Jay Rayner production. The music was written, arranged and performed by me, Jay Rayner, and Robert Rickenberg. The mix engineer was Josh Gibbs. The assistant producer was Jemima Rathbone. The producer is Selena Ream, and the executive producer is Darby Doris. Additional production is from Steve Ackerman. Next time, it's Manchester United and England football star turned TV pundit and businessman, it's Gary Neville.
I love football less today than I did 6 weeks ago, and I've not seen a match. And that's a big thing for me to say. I love football less than I did 6 weeks ago.